Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, where's that creepy music? Huh? There it is. There we go.
Yeah, this was for a good 30 seconds.
This is good stuff. Yeah, this is pop culture's greatest hits right here.
It's not over till this ends.
Yeah. We gotta get the creepy Charles Manson. Outstanding. Just when you thought it was a good idea to throw away those LaToya Jackson CDs, you had to listen to this before Pop Culture Stars. Regardless, welcome to Pop Culture Stars for Stardate 2123. We hope everybody out there is doing fantastic. I am your host with the least right now, Dave Atwell, and we're going to be doing this one indoors. We're going to forego the delicious cigar from Godfather Cigars. We will have ourselves a robust drink, but it's like 6 degrees with a 30-degree or a 30-mile-an-hour wind outside and raining. So this fat kid is not sitting in the elements that much to drag a cigar and probably shorten his lifespan. So we are doing this one from the man cave, which is the coldest room in the house here at Atwell Manor. But nevertheless, I am dressed for the occasion, have my drink in hand, and we do tonight have a very, very, and I'm talking like talking in caps right now for all you youngins out there who don't like being talked to in caps. I am talking to everybody in caps. We have a very special guest tonight, so we're going to kick it around the horn so that way we can get it on. So first off, I'm going to head out to the, okay, the geography north. West, not the west east like I did a couple weeks ago, northwest to the fine city of Indianapolis and its outlying regions where the alpacas do some naughty stuff, but they don't do it with the drama llamas. By God, we'll get back to that. Timothy, what is going on, young man? What's happening?
That's right. Keep them drama llamas down the road, man. We don't want any of that. We just like the spitting out the pack is that spit at one another when it's time to eat hay. We are doing fine up here in the wonderful land of Westfield adjacent to Carmel, which is adjacent to the great Indianapolis. It is colder than anything here, and I'm curious if that's why maybe even though you're far, far away southeast of here, if maybe you're inside because of that. But the funny thing is here in Indiana, as they say in just about every Midwestern state, if you don't like the weather, stick around a day or two. And I've been told that I think next week maybe is when it'll get back up into the 50s. So that's pretty odd for February. But I'm sure that we'll go right back down to the 20s, 30s, the teens, whatever. Anyway, I'm looking forward to a marvelous show. Kids have been in a bus accident, but they're fine. All kinds of drama where I work, too. Drama everywhere, all over the place. But it's wonderful to be here on the show, ready to talk to these folks. Let's get it going.
I hear you. Yeah, I ran into somebody today that said, Dave, you think it's going to snow tonight? And I just hit my Homer Simpson, hey, shut up. When I was 7, snow was great, but at 52, snow is the last thing that I feel like dealing with. I'll just stick my head in the freezer for 30 seconds, and I'm good. Don't need any snow because I'll have to travel in it, and adults can't have snow days. So, yeah, snow, just stay wherever. Just stay in Canada. Let the Canadians worry about it. I'm not touching it. But, Tim, it's great to have you aboard this evening. I hope you're staying warm, my brother. Good to have you aboard. Now,
thank you, sir.
We're going to sail south, probably 2 hours south of me, to the fine second home of mine of Myrtle Beach. And Lord knows I wish I was there right now. Regardless, to my good brother, and chaser of the unknown, or maybe the unknown is chasing him. Dr. John, what's going on?
Hey, buddy Dave, and hey, Tim. Good to be here with you guys tonight. It is cold. It is raining. And I did not sign up for this. This is not Myrtle Beach weather. Certainly it will. I mean, the Canadians are coming down in droves because to them, this is springtime. So here we are. We got it. We got one of my very favorite people on tonight. She's just such a great friend. I'm going to let you introduce her, but I'm going to want to say thank you to her for being on tonight. And we're going to have a lot of fun. We are going to talk about the soon to be known, formerly the unknown. So back to you, Brother Dave.
Outstanding. All right. Great to have you aboard. Always appreciate the assist there, young man. So tonight, our very special guest, YouTuber. I guess we can call a YouTuber. If I say YouTube celebrity or YouTube superstar. We can hang any title you want to on it. But she is the Cryptid Huntress. And my son has gotten hooked on your channel, by the way. And Dr. John and myself had the privilege of being guests on your show. So we're returning the favor and having you on this evening. So to everybody out there listening, pop culture land, welcome, Miss Jessica Jones. How are you doing this evening, ma'am?
Well, hey, Dave, I am doing excellent. I would not consider myself a YouTube star by any means. Oh, my
you
gosh.
You got more likes than
I do. Have a YouTube channel. Well, you know, yes. Well, I never meant to go this route. I did not even know I was going public. I'm actually a Bigfoot field researcher, and I do a bunch of paranormal investigations, and that's first and foremost. And somehow along my journey, I've gotten shows, and you know, I'm a weekend host at Space Out Radio. I have a weekend show there, and I got my YouTube channel where I talk about cryptids, Bigfoot, aliens, Dogman. Just recently, I talked about the Otter Man. Okay, if you guys know what that is. the Kushtaka. Yes, it's actually up in Canada, in Alaska. But yeah, I do a whole bunch of research on all things cryptid. So yeah, thank you guys for having me tonight. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely, yeah, I've been looking forward to having you aboard because we've got a nifty mix on here, and a lot of times we get on here and throw some barbs back and forth. Then we always roast Dr. John whenever the opportunity arises, but. And I'm sure, Tim, you'll agree, there are some things on here that we kind of say, you know what, hey, you got a point there, you know. So it's always good to ask, how did you get started doing all this kind of stuff right here? I mean, did something happen that made you a believer, or were you a believer all along? Or, you know, how did you go about getting into the cryptid business?
Well, honestly, I grew up being very attuned to the paranormal. And when I was a kid, I would see dead people, you know, like that movie, like I see dead people. I would see ghosts and had a lot of interesting stories that came from my family lineage. As far as my great-grandmother and my great-aunt actually had like an ET abduction experience in their car one night back in 1982, around the 1980s, actually, up in Rome, Georgia. And so it was something they didn't talk about very often, but that's not the only story. Back in the early, late 1800s, I believe, I think it was late 1800s, early 1900s, when my great-great-great-grandmother was passing away, a ball of fire came out of the woods during, right when she was about to pass away. She was at the house, the whole family was there. A ball of fire came out of the woods and floated around the house, went inside the house and under the house. And back outside the house, and around that time, she passed away as the ball of light left out of the house. So, you know, and the entire family saw it. So I come from a family of stories of supernatural occurrences. So it's not surprising that everyone in my family was always very open to supernatural, paranormal stuff. And I was that kid that went to the school library and I went straight to the, you know, the sci-fi section, or I get back then it was definitely the fictional section with the ghost, you know. Today it's not so fictional in my book. But yeah, I would go look for ghost stories and stories about Bigfoot and any kind of UFOs. And I always did all my science projects on like black holes, you know, and just weird stuff that first graders really aren't that usually into, you know. So yeah, I've just always had a connection with the other side, with paranormal. And then you fast forward to, I guess around, I was in my early 30s, maybe. I guess I was in my early 30s. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but you can guess after I tell you this story. But yeah, I was a little bit younger, and it was about 12 years ago, actually. I went to a meeting with my mother. My mother was very open to, you know, paranormal stuff. And she was going to these weekly meetups down in Smyrna, Georgia, near Marietta, at a man's house named Mr. Sam Matthews. And Sam and his partner, Verlene, they had a Wednesday night meeting that everybody in Atlanta knows about. If you're into metaphysical stuff, New Agey stuff, you know, that was a place to go on Wednesday nights. And my mother used to go, and she invited me one night. She was like, "Look, Jess, there's some Bigfoot researchers that are going to be there to talk about their Bigfoot research, and I think you'd really enjoy it." And so I was like, "All right, I'll come," you know. And I went and I listened to these fellas from North Georgia who were Bigfoot field researchers, and they had all this evidence, and, you know, they were professional trackers and, you know, army medics and all this stuff. They had been on the trail of Bigfoot for quite some time and knew a lot about it. And I just had a lot of questions for those guys, right? And I went up to them after the presentation was over, and I asked questions like, "Well, why have you guys never found a body? You know, where's the poop? Like, what? Like, I was genuinely wanting to know why have I never come across it? You know, I'm a country girl and I go to the mountains a lot. Like, why have I never seen a pile of Bigfoot poop? I don't know, you know." But the guys were like, "Well, why don't you come with us on an expedition sometime?" They invited me. And so what better way to learn than to go out into the woods with a bunch of strange men for a weekend in the middle of nowhere? And so I ended up doing it.
How wholesome. Yeah. Absolutely.
Totally. Listen, it was the best thing I ever did, because I'm here talking to you guys tonight about it, you know, the whole world. You know, sometimes you just have to go with your gut and follow your intuition. And God, the universe, you get put on your path, but you gotta go for it. You gotta take that leap sometimes, you know. I worked for the government back then. I did not see myself being a Bigfoot researcher or anything, you know. But here I am, and I'm loving it, you know. So that's kind of how I got into it, and I got I went on my first expedition with that team, and after that weekend we had so much crazy activity up in the North Georgia mountains. From Bigfoot to UFOs, we've experienced portals that my team has documented, and we sent people inside of and out of, ghosts. You name it. We've experienced it out there, and it doesn't just stay out in the field. It comes home with us sometimes. But
I have a question. Sorry, okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I didn't know if it was good to ask questions now or if I should wait till the end. My etiquette may be off here
ahead.
A bit. So, but I'm curious. You mentioned portals. So I want to know, mm-hmm. right off the bat, would this be a portal, like, are we talking to a different geographical location or a different dimension or a different time or what?
I'm going to go ahead and say all of the above, perhaps.
Wow.
We're not positively sure. We're still researching that area. One evening, this was a few years ago, actually, our team was out in this place that we researched. It's called The Meadow. And if anyone listening to your show tonight is familiar with like Coast to Coast AM, the head of my team, Trey Hudson, I'm a member of three different teams, and one of my teams, the head is Trey Hudson, and he's been on Coast to Coast to talk about this. And of course, I have my show, and you know, I've been on, God, I don't know how many podcasts and shows talking about this. So people might have heard about this, but it's the Meadow Project is what my team works on. And we were out in the meadow. The team was out in the meadow one weekend, and you know, I guess there was a whole bunch of people kind of put across like the meadow, like in different corners of the meadow. And y'all know Matthew Delf does shows with you guys. He goes out in the meadow with us as well. He's part of my team. But yeah, people were stationed up all around this open field. And basically, what we go do is like observe, right? Because we have so much paranormal activity in this one area. We just go sit up, you know, in little different areas, and we watch, we listen, you know, we experience stuff, whatever's going on out there. And one evening, everybody was just kind of sitting, you know, everybody's dispersed into teams, and we're sitting there, and one of the guys noticed through his FLIR, like his thermal imaging camera, that a big box, like a cube-shaped something was in the middle of this open field, and it came out of nowhere, and it had a heat signature to it. And so he handed his FLIR over to the next guy, and he looked in it and said, oh yeah, there's a big cube. And so they radioed over to some of the guys across the field, and they said, hey, there's something out here, y'all go check it out. And they kind of guided the men over to it, and when they got to it, they disappeared. Their heat signatures completely disappeared, as if they had walked into something. And this is an open field. Their heat signatures should not have disappeared at all. Well, those two gentlemen said, former military, highly trained search and rescue guys, professional tracker type stuff. They both and they're remote viewers too, by the way. We're all trained in remote viewing on my team, and so they knew something was off. They said that as they walked over to where they were guided, because they could not see anything, and granted it's late at night, they were seen going into this cube, but they couldn't see with their own eyes. And as they walked into it, they described it as feeling like they were walking through a velvet curtain, like a dark velvet curtain. And the temperature changed as they walked over to it, and the vegetation on the ground changed. And the atmosphere changed, not only the temperature changed, but they could not see the stars anymore, they said. And they stood in there for just a minute. And, of course, they don't know they're standing inside anything. They're just standing. You know, they just realized something's weird. And they decided, oh, something's off. And so they backed up, and they walked out, and their heat signatures reappeared. Okay, well, you know, we didn't have any other explanation for this. And by the way, the cube started to dissipate, and it moved. After they walked out of it, it moved positions, and then it disappeared. Okay, so had that cube moved while they were standing inside of it, would they still be there today? You know, like, would they have gone with it? That was an interesting question, because, you know, when people are researching Bigfoot, a lot of times we're out in the field and they will appear and disappear seemingly out of nowhere. And so it's my opinion that they could be interdimensional beings. But what does that even mean? Like, what is interdimensional? Like, they're going in and out of dimensions. How do they do that? Through portals? You know, well, could this have been a portal? So we assume that was a portal of some sort. Now, was it a natural portal? I don't know. Could it have been some ET alien type thing? Maybe. Recently, there was the David Politis film that just came out with the missing 411, the alien UFO. I forgot the name of it, but it's got something to do with UFOs and aliens. And there's actually a portion of that movie. It's like a documentary, I guess. And there's one gentleman in there who describes a cube. And he said that an ET or something came out of it, but he described exactly like what we saw, and that's actually in that movie. This is something that my team experienced, you know, 5 years ago. So, yeah, you know, and also we've got that whole phenomenon of the missing people from all the national parks, the missing 411 series that David Colitis wrote. We wonder, you know, everybody's looking for explanations as to where all these people are going. Well, maybe they're walking into these cubes. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and so that's why we're
still researching. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they've got the ones where the kids wandered off, and they found the kids 7-8 miles away, unscratched.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff goes on in Yosemite. Now, I don't know why particularly Yosemite, but I know. Yeah, there's been stories of that where, you know, people, mainly children, will turn up just disappearing, and they'll find them so far away in such a short amount of time that it's not physically possible for them to actually make the trek. How did they get over there? And, you know, normally if it's any type of human intervention, like an abduction or something like that, how did the abductor get them that far across? You know what I mean? Regardless of whether it was a, you know, an abduction case, you know, a criminal, versus something paranormal or you know, from another realm or whatever, you know, it leaves something to be asked when that kind of stuff happens. And a lot of times, and I've said it on here enough times, if it's the guy who lives in the cabin up on the hill and he only comes to get groceries once a month, and he buys, like, nothing but Beanie Weenies, Vienna sausages, and a carton of Newports, and then he goes back for another month. It's hard to kind of take any type of anything of his speaking to a literal level. But when you have police, when you have, you know, military people in special forces and all that kind of jazz coming out and going, hey, you know, here's what happened. And when children end up missing, they, you know, I Lord knows I've been involved in enough Amber Alerts, or Code Adams, better yet, in my 37 years of management. And the amount of stuff that we do when we hear a Code Adam, everything locks down. And we take the best of the best of the staff, and they're just put out to, like, you know, comb every corner of the building and everything like that. So when a child turns up missing in the woods, you got to figure that the same thing happens at an authoritative level with law enforcement and whatnot. These folks aren't knuckleheads. These guys aren't crazy. These guys aren't your drunk uncle. You know what I mean? And when they come down and go, hey, I don't know what to tell you, there's got to be some credence to that. And even for a naysayer like myself, it's those kind of things that happen that make me stop and go, okay, tell me more. You know what I mean? Because now it's just not the Randy Quaid story. You know what I mean? It's something that's, something that's got some legs. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's some very interesting stuff. I mean, it's got to make you wonder. Now, going on that tip, speaking on the naysayer and all that kind of jazz, you know, we joked on the show a couple months back. I don't know if I told you about it when we were doing the YouTube thing, but there was a giant rooster next door at my neighbor's house. She's 91 years old, so I'm concerned for her well-being. She lives alone. And one morning, I was out with the dogs. It's like right at the crack of dawn, and I see this huge bird, and I don't have my specs on, you know. And I thought it was a turkey, but knowing what I know is that turkeys don't travel alone. I also have water going behind my house, so I know the turkey's not going to get over the water onto the property. So I'm like, what did I see? So I didn't go in and say anything to my wife and son. Why? Because they already think I'm nuts. They don't need any more ammo, right? So a couple days later, I'm out again. It's about 5:30 in the morning, right when the sun was coming up. And I see it again. But this time, I had my phone in my pocket. So I took a picture of this thing, and I got inside, and when I got a moment to myself where I didn't have anybody going, what's that a picture of? I sat there and blew it up and looked at it and found out it was a giant rooster. I mean, this thing was the biggest pile of chicken nuggets you ever seen in your life.
Oh, my gosh.
But what happened was I had the ability then to walk up to the people in my neighborhood and go, hey, heads up, there's a mutant rooster wandering the neighborhood. And people didn't look at me funny because I had that stuff on the phone. And right now, one of the things that's really bringing this UFO stuff to a light is the fact that people in the 70s and 80s, folks said, ah, well, man, I didn't have my Polaroid in the glove box, and everybody's going, right? But now everybody has a cell phone. And for a lot of people, they never put the darn thing down. So it's
right.
That's why we're starting to see more stuff. You know, people say, hey, I saw three yellow lights over top of my house. And yeah, I bet you did. Well, hang on a second. Let me show you the video. So when you guys are going out and doing this stuff, do you guys carry a certain amount of technology out there with you? Or, I mean, do you guys have a set stuff of equipment? Or you just barely, you know, just going out there and, you know, kind of just doing raw research, so to speak?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I mentioned that I am a member of different teams. So each team that I'm a part of operates differently. Okay, so the team that I go to the meadow with is that uses a lot of technology. Okay, not a ton, but we all have our backpacks, and all the guys especially have a bunch of equipment, you know, and we take our Geiger counters and all of our EVP stuff and the K2 meters and, you know, basically kind of stuff that you use when you're ghost hunting, you know, that kind
right.
of stuff. We do the SD sessions out there where we communicate with whatever's out there. You know, we do the CE5 protocol and stuff like that. So, I mean, we cover all the bases, okay, with that team. And we take base measurements before the day starts and at night and all that kind of stuff to see if there's any kind of radiation or any energetic shifts out there, basically, in the field where we're going to be researching for that week. Now, other teams, you know, one of my other teams, my Bigfoot research team, we're all trained in remote viewing. And a lot of times when we go out, I mean, people will take equipment, but we seem to have a lot more activity when we don't. Okay, so that's a team where we're really out there. I personally am out there to experience, not to measure, okay, if that makes sense. I'm out there more to communicate with the creatures that are out there and stuff like that. And so, like I said, every team is different. So you know, I'm the kind of researcher that is not out there to prove anything to anyone. I am one that is doing this all for my own experience. You know, but that's just me. I'm different than the other people on my teams, honestly, in a lot of ways. But yeah, I'm out there to experience, and I honestly bring the high strangeness with me everywhere I go. Okay, so. I'm like I'm like a beacon of high strangeness out there. So it makes it fun. Yeah. So there's never a dull moment when I'm out in the field. But yeah, it's it depends when it comes to the equipment, just which team I'm with.
Because, you know, a lot of times, and you were speaking earlier how you know, with personal experiences and all that jazz, and take, for instance, like the afterlife. I was never if we go in a time machine and go back 30 years and somebody hit me up about the afterlife, I'd look at you and say, oh, man, come on. Go on with that mess. You know, when you die, things go black and the worms start growing in you, and it's all over with. I lost my best friend in 2003. He was 38 years old at the time. And one of the last things he told his mom in the hospital was, I'm okay because angels are all around me. And they said he just kept looking around the room, and he said, look at all the angels. And next thing you know, he slipped away. He's gone. And some things have happened to me along the way since his passing. and the passing of my my dear mother-in-law that I miss so much. And now I have a whole different outlook of that stuff. And why? Because it hit me right here between the eyes. So do you have any type of experiences out there that you have that you've had in the past where it just made you stop and go, okay, I'm listening. You know, it's you got my attention.
I mean, every day I have those experiences. See, because there's such a spiritual aspect to all of this, even with Bigfoot. These creatures and a lot of these things that we're experiencing are on a different frequency than most humans. And a lot of people, I believe personally, I think a lot of people don't have experiences and see ghosts and are able to hear Bigfoot and see them and all that kind of stuff, unless you're on that frequency with them. And somehow I have hit that frequency, and I think I've been there since I was a kid. And so, yeah, you know, I mean, I've been awakened at night and had ETs in my bedroom, you know, I've had ghosts in my room. I've had close contact with, you know, experiences with Bigfoot and stuff. I mean, my whole life is, whoa, it's like, whoa, that was weird. You got my attention. Like, it's just like an everyday thing for me. So yeah, I mean, ever since I was a kid, I can't think of any one thing that was more shocking than the next, to be honest with you.
Right.
But that's just been my whole life.
Yeah, it's like there's got to be a connection type. So, Dr. John.
Yes, sir.
I know you've had connections along the way. Talk to me.
Well, all right. I've got two questions for Jessica. Number one, when you're talking about the North Georgia Mountains, are you talking about Rabun County where we host the Georgia Bigfoot Conference?
That's one of the areas. Yeah. Yeah. There's, I do spend a lot of time up there. Yeah. Just all of the North Georgia Mountains, all the Appalachians, like the Appalachian Mountain Range all the way to North Carolina and all the way up. Yeah. But that's a very prosperous area right there. I do enjoy that area.
It certainly is. And it was really funny. It's like Clayton, Georgia asked me to come there to do the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. I called five counties in Northeast Georgia to find a location for the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. And the only person that called me back was dear sweet Annie Williams, who was the director of events in Rabun County. And when I told her that we wanted to do the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, she jumped on it. And the Chamber of Commerce has jumped on it. And I'll tell you one thing, you talk about a bunch of folks that are extremely excited about Georgia Bigfoot, and that is Rabun County, Georgia, and they really, they love it. We bring 400 people there, 500 people there. It's a very well attended event. It's a lot of fun. So all I got to say is, you know, we're glad to be up there. And yes, there are a lot of Bigfoot. I had the most amazing experience. Jessica, may I share with you a story that I have never told anybody?
Absolutely, please. Yes.
Okay, so I'm up on a one-lane dirt road to go see a buddy of mine who Facebook told me had a birthday that day. So I just dropped in, and he's way up in the mountains toward Dillard, Georgia, where we're going to be having the next Georgia Bigfoot Conference. So I get up there, and as I just knock on the door, oh, my goodness, John, it's so good to see you. I said, yeah, I saw you had a birthday, and I had an extra hour, so I thought I would stop in and say hello. And he was great. He had a couple friends over. I got to meet him. It was really nice. And I said, I'll tell you what, I just want to, it's a nice, calm, quiet, rainy day in North Georgia. And I just want to go up there and stand next to your cabin because I love it up there and just kind of take in some of the vibes and everything. So, so I said my goodbyes and walked up to his cabin where I stay frequently when I go there. And so I'm standing there on the one-lane dirt road. It's beautiful. It's calm, it's quiet, it's a little chilly, but that's okay. And I see across the road, maybe about 50 feet from me, a square or a rectangular dark shape come up from the ground. And then I see that rectangular dark shape get propelled up about 50 feet over a pine tree and come crashing down. and I knew exactly what had happened. So I waved and I said, hey, it's good to see you. What had happened is it would take a Bigfoot, the strength of a Bigfoot, to launch something that big. It was a large piece of bark. It would what happened was that was Bigfoot's way of saying, hello, we're glad to see you. Because I'm going to tell you something. Had that Bigfoot come walking down that one-lane dirt road, I'd have had a heart attack. So that Bigfoot was so smart that it made sure that I saw what it was doing. And, I mean, you see a big old square, rectangular object go up above a pine tree and come crashing down. I'm going to tell you something. That'll make you stop and wonder. What do you think, Jessica? Do you think that was Bigfoot's way of saying hello and I don't want you to die?
Yeah, it was letting me know it was there and stay away. Those things can be territorial, by the way.
I don't think it was so much stay away as it was, hey, we're glad you're here.
About your perception. You would have known. It would have let you know if it didn't want you there. I promise you that.
Oh, absolutely. And I've had that experience now. I was basically told to stay inside that cabin one night. They terrified me. They got it to where I would never walk outside of that cabin that night until sunup. And I mean, and that's in my book, Look Up in the Sky. It's kind of a fun story, and I enjoy it. And those are some of the stories that I like to write about and stuff like that. But that story right there, the hey, how's it going? That's one that I never told, and I think it's really a cool story. So anyway, now you know that one.
That is cool.
And Jessica, I'm really pleased that you came on the show tonight because you've got a lot of experience in remote viewing, and you've got a lot of experience hunting Bigfoot and hunting cryptids and watching UFOs. So we're just really glad that you came on tonight. And
thank you.
And I always enjoy being on your show, and you had me and Dave on last time. So I just enjoy being on the show, and I enjoy having you here. I just wanted to say thank you for being here. And that's all I got for now, but I will certainly have another question or two for you in a few minutes.
Well, thank you. That is very sweet of you. I really enjoy being here, and I enjoyed having y'all on the other day. That was about a week ago. So thank y'all for coming on my show.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, and speaking of remote viewing, I actually have a show tomorrow night where I remote viewed something out of Yosemite Park, actually. I know David mentioned Yosemite earlier, I think. Somebody did.
Right.
And just briefly. Yeah. I do this show on Thursday nights where I remote view paranormal stuff, like, alleged attacks by Bigfoot or Dogman or something. And sometimes I take a break from the carnage and I just remote view something fun. Okay. And so for tomorrow night, I have remote viewed, the Fresno Nightcrawlers. Okay. And so, and some of those were actually filmed in Yosemite National Park. And so I'm going to do a show about that. Now, I'm not going to give away what my data was tonight. You're going to have to watch the show tomorrow night at the Cryptid Huntress on YouTube. but that's something really cool. They look like the night crawlers. If you guys aren't familiar with the night crawlers, I'm sure you are. But if you're not, it looks like a set of legs walking. It's a set of white ghostly legs with a little head at the top. About 4 feet tall, walking. And so I looked into those things just to see if they were real and where they came from and what they were. And my results are pretty interesting. So so everybody, please check that out. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting show tomorrow night.
Jessica, I would say that I could at least infer that they are real, correct?
They're real, yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that much. They're real. Yes, there's multiple videos of these things, too, from Fresno, California, and Yosemite National Park. And then there are other videos from all over the world, actually. There's several videos of these things from different parts of the world and different parts of the U.S. Yeah. So and they have a history with the Native American legends and lore, and a matter of fact, I have a guy that's coming on my show tomorrow night, Travis Moose Tooth, and he is actually part of the Cree Native Americans up in Alberta, Canada, and he has a lot of stories, and is going to come on, and he has experience with these beings, I guess you can call them. And so he's going to come on and talk about it tomorrow night with me. So,
wow.
Yeah, I love doing the remote viewing stuff. It is my favorite. It's my favorite hobby.
All right, and Jessica, I've got one other humorous comment I'd like to make. I would like for you to remote view the first Howard Stern show that aired in Fresno.
Oh,
I was there listening, and it is the most entertaining, probably 15 minutes in the history of all radio. Got him kicked off. they decided that Howard Stern was probably a little much for Fresno. So just, yeah, take a look at it.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
I'm
mostly into the paranormal aspect. I don't know.
Yeah, he's into the abnormal. Yeah.
The abnormal. Not paranormal,
that's
the abnormal. Yes.
Now, Jessica, you were speaking on, was it Dogman? And bear with me, I'm 52 years old. My memory lasts probably about 15 to 18 minutes, and then it's gone. That's why I carry an ID with me to remind myself who I am. What was the cryptid that you were wanting to speak of in the green room? There was one you had noted.
Oh, is it the Otter Man, perhaps?
There you go.
I've never heard of the Otter Man.
Yeah. Let me
hear
it. Well,
I had not either. Okay, so here's the interesting thing. So what I do is called coordinate remote viewing, and I'm given blind targets, okay? I am tasked blind targets, which means I have no idea what I'm remote viewing, okay? What I've been trained extensively in is coordinate remote viewing, and I am given a set of numbers, okay? And so I was given a set of numbers, eight numbers, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, basically, like random numbers. And that's all I'm given, and I know it's a target, and I have to locate my target. Okay, so I sit down at my table in total silence, and I have my paper and my pen, and I just start writing. There's a process to it. It's very scientific. You know, our military does remote viewing, and I'm trained in that form of remote viewing. And so, as soon as I write those numbers down on my paper, I do some ideograms or my hand sketches some stuff, and all this information floods into my head. And I write everything down on that paper, okay? And I go sheet after sheet after sheet of paper, writing just information down. And you got to remember, I have eight numbers. That's all I know. And I have all this information that comes out of those eight numbers because they're assigned a target, okay? Well, my friend Barry Littleton, who is an amazing researcher, I taught him how to task me with blind targets. And so he has a whole bunch of really interesting stuff that he wanted me to look into, and one of them happened to be the Otter Man, the Kushtaka, okay, out of Alaska. Now, I'd never heard of this. I didn't know what it was. I didn't even know that was what my target was. And he had given me several targets before, which ranged from anywhere from TRAPPIST-1 star system to I can't remember. There's a whole bunch of different ones that I've done recently with him. But this one was the Otter Man. And so this thing, it actually looks like a Sasquatch, but it swims in the water in the oceans of Alaska and the coast of Canada. And it has the body, like a humanoid body that looks kind of like a Sasquatch, but it has a long head with like a long neck, a small head, and it looks like an otter. So they call it the Otter Man, or the Kushtaka, as the Tlingit people call it up there. So the story goes that this thing is violent. It gets in the water and it waits for like sailors to come out there and small children, and it cries like a baby or mimics a woman. And so people go out there trying to find, you know, trying to save a woman and a kid. And what it does is it takes people underwater and it kills them. And, wow. And it's just a story that they say that there's tens of thousands of these that live off the coast of Alaska and Canada. And so something that Barry had heard of, he wanted me to, he just threw it out there just for fun, right? Gave me those numbers. And I did the target, and I tell you, it was really odd because the first time I did my the target, I was off planet. I was like not on Earth. And, you know, I'm usually pretty on target. I've been doing remote viewing for so long. I'm not bad at it. Okay, we'll put it that way. I'm not bad at it. And I was picking up all this stuff like I was off planet. I thought I was on some kind of asteroid or something. I was leaving some planet somewhere and floating through space. And eventually I crashed to Earth, okay, during this target. And so when I gave Barry my data when I got done with that target. I mean, I had a whole bunch of information. And when I sent it to him, he thought, oh, my God. This is fascinating. You know, he's like, I want you to look deeper into this. So, you know, I did one more target with the Kushtaka, which I still didn't know what it was. And I ended up crashing in Asia, somewhere in Asia, Mongolia. Okay. In that area, probably before it was Mongolia. Okay. But it was in that area. And it was like a Sasquatch looking being that I was seeing, and it migrated from Asia over some kind of landmass, like a peninsula, into Alaska, okay? And it was aquatic. And so I picked up on exactly what it was. So it was really interesting. Oh, and it was like I was picking up like a siren or like a mermaid or something. It was 100% on target. It was this Kushtaka thing. And so what that told us was whatever this thing is, first of all, it's real. Second of all, it's not native to this planet. Okay. And third of all, this is a real thing, and it's actually still in the area to this day, and it is there. It's not like going to be violent unless you mess with it, you know, usually. It is a killer, but it won't kill you unless you come after it, basically, is what my data was suggesting. But anyways, it was mind-blowing. It was absolutely mind-blowing to get all this information off of those numbers, you know, like as usual. That's why I love remote viewing. But,
sounds like
but you know, it's a – yeah. Well, you know, there's a common question that I get as a Bigfoot researcher is, you know, are Bigfoots of this planet? You know, are they native to our planet or did they come – are they alien? Are they like an alien species? Well, in my data, when I remote view Bigfoot, a lot of times I do believe that they are native to this planet. This Kushtaka thing is not of this planet. It did not come from here. It came here from another planet. So so that's where it's much different than the Bigfoot. Okay, so but anyway, that's what the Kushtaka is. It's terrifying. I actually have a picture. It's actually an artist rendition of one on my YouTube channel on art for that show. It's terrifying, okay? So go to the Cryptid Huntress on YouTube. You guys, please subscribe and check out the Kushtaka, okay, that video. And you'll see it. You'll see it. I have pictures of them. So,
Jessica.
I mean, Jessica. It's artist renditions. Yes.
Jessica, this is Dr. John. I've got a question that has been burning in my soul for about 6 years. And I need a remote viewer to answer this question. Brooks Agnew is a friend of mine. I've interviewed him several times. He is the Hollow Earth guy. Okay, you know who Brooks Agnew is?
I believe he and I will both be speaking at the Journey to Truth conference in May in Grafton, Illinois.
Okay,
so I have
great.
Not met him yet, mm-hmm. but we're going to be hanging out in a couple months together. So
well,
at a conference.
Well, here's my question. I know one
okay.
remote viewer who is very, very good, and that remote viewer refuses to answer this question. And the question is the Earth hollow, and is there a hole to go into it around the Arctic Circle somewhere? Is it hollow?
There is an inner Earth. I can say that, yes. And there are entrances all over. There are entrances to it all over the Earth. And I have picked them up in my remote viewing data.
My research shows that, too. But what I'm saying is there a fairly large hole up there somewhere near the Arctic Circle?
Probably. I mean, I've heard there is. I've not remote viewed it. I have not remote viewed that personally, so I don't know positively, but I've heard there is.
Well, that's what I've heard, but I know that there are entrances at the South Pole. There are entrances in Europe. There are entrances at Mammoth Cave. I mean,
there's one in the Ural Mountains. They're all over the place. Yeah, they're everywhere. I mean, I believe that's why the Russian hikers were all murdered at the Dyatlov Pass incident. I remote viewed that, and I believe that they got off course and they were intercepted by military, and there's some ET involvement as well because they got too close to the entrance to that entrance to inner Earth right there. So I don't know. I'm just saying. they're heavily guarded.
That is the same result that we came up with when Scarycast did a two-week episode on Dyatlov Pass. That is exactly what we came up with. We came up with it thanks to Robin McRae, a remote viewer, and me, and we kind of like pieced it together. That is exactly what we came up with. Those poor Russian hikers, those graduate students, were terrified.
I was able to communicate with them through my remote viewing process, and they all told me the same thing. That they had, they were scared because something came from the sky. And it seemed as though they said it was like umbrellas with lights on the bottom, that were like parachutes basically. But it was the military. They were kind of hunted down by the military that night. And it was because they had trespassed, cause they got off course and they were too close to, I believe it was the entrance to inner Earth. Now that was the inner Earth, and the entrance that was not in my data, but there was something, there was a missing piece. And they just kept telling me they had trespassed and, you know, they just made a mistake. You know, they got off course, and they were intercepted by some soldiers, and a commandant was involved. There are all these words that were coming up that I didn't even know what they were. And I just write everything down as I'm remote viewing, and it all just kind of lined up, and it was, I'm going to say about a month later after I had done that remote viewing, and I actually did a show on it and to talk about my data. I was looking, someone sent me a map of all the entrances to inner Earth, the reported ones, right? And one of the main entrances was right there in the Ural Mountains. And so it brought it all together. When I saw that, I was like, something just completely just resonated. It made sense. I was like, that's what it was. That's what it was. That's what they were guarding. That's what they got too close to, because they kept telling me they were too close to something, and they had trespassed.
Now, Jessica, I've got my final quick question on this Dyatlov Pass thing. Is that a map that is publicly available that you have on your site?
I don't have it on my site, but I could find it and send it to you. Yeah, someone
I would really
sent it
like
to me.
To see
so.
It. Because I tell you what I'd like to do. It's been about 2 years since we did that two-episode Scarycast, and I'd like to have you and Robin McRae, because you're both experienced remote viewers, and I'd like to have you folks on there. Robin will not be a host that evening. She'll be a guest along with you, and I want us to talk about the Dyatlov Pass thing. And Dr. Trey Dunaway was on the show. He had just come on, and he had a good time, and Devin Tate, I'll see if I can get him to come back on. He is taking a break from Scarycast, and I'll see if I can kind of have a little homecoming about Dyatlov Pass. Would you be okay maybe in March participating in that wonderful evening on Scarycast?
Oh, I'd love to. Absolutely. That's a really interesting story. It's one of my favorites, actually. So, yeah.
Oh,
well, totally. Count me
Robin
out.
Loves it. I love it because, you know, Robin has a very close connection with Igor Burtsev. And she always tells Igor, the great Russian Dr. Igor Burtsev, my co-author in a book, and I'm very proud of that, but my co-author, but he's also a renowned Bigfoot hunter, and he spends, as she says, far too much time in the Ural Mountains. It's dangerous up there is what she says, and it really is. So, and from what we found out about the Russians in the Ukraine war, they're just not afraid to shoot anybody. They're not. So, I mean, what can you say?
Well, you know, actually, yeah, some of the last four of the group that were found, you know, a couple of months after the other bodies were found, they had actually, their bodies had been mutilated, much like cattle mutilations. Actually, one of the woman that was found there, her tongue had been removed. And it didn't just come out, it was removed. And they're, like I said, their bodies were mutilated, much like cattle. So, it's very interesting. I definitely picked up some ET involvement with the military there. So I think that would make sense, that some kind of inner earthing is going on right there. Yeah.
Okay, we'll engineer that, and I'll let you know, and thanks. I'll turn control of your television set back over to Dave Atwell and Pop Culture Stars.
Yeah, hold on for dear life, whatever you do. You know, we've been on here the last couple weeks, and I had brought up the topic of the Kincaid Caves out there in the Grand Canyon. And, you know, when I'm letting my mind drift and I'm not concentrating on all the woes of the world and everything, you know, I'm eating dinner and I'll go down a rabbit hole a little bit. And I've been reading up on these Kincaid Caves things so much. Well, there was a young man who apparently he did the GoPro thing. And again, here I go again with the, it's not just spoken. They're actually getting to a point now where we're getting stuff. We're seeing stuff. And it's a lot harder for the naysayers to scream baloney when you're having video footage. And I mean, granted, people can doctor the stuff up. There's Photoshop and all that kind of cool stuff. But for the sake of argument, you know, you got to take some credence in these things because folks are actually going through the trouble of getting, putting the technology to use. So nevertheless, there's a young man who had posted, and I can't remember if it was YouTube or on a website or whatever, but he had gone to the area hiking and was actually stopped by a lone military. And he said the guy was dressed in utilities, was armed, had a very official presence, had a radio that were, you know, people were talking on the radio as he was telling him and his group, you can't be down here. Okay, so he said, you know, did the usual thing. You guys are in a restricted area. Turn around and go back. And the guy said, well, this isn't part of the national park. We were going to go hiking. And the guy said, I am going to ask you one last time for you and your party to turn around and leave. And the way he said it kind of have an ominous tone to it. So the guy and his group said, okay, all right, fine, we're backing off. So they thought they'd be wise guys, and they hiked a couple miles down and had kayaks and actually got into the Colorado River and said, all right, well, if we can't hike there, how are they going to get out in the middle of the Colorado River and tell us we can't go that way? So they started paddling, and they got their GoPros strapped on their chest while they're kayaking, and an Apache helicopter comes flying. And, you know, in the event you're not hip to modern-day warfare, Apache helicopters aren't used for weather and news. Apache helicopters are used for destruction and nothing else. What is an Apache helicopter? Let's just totally forget about the young man and the utilities, armed to the teeth with the radio and the security and detail and all that. What is an Apache helicopter flying around the Grand Canyon for if there's nothing there? Okay? I don't have an Apache helicopter. Right. And I don't have an Apache helicopter flying. You know how I know that there's nothing but bears and deer in the woods behind my house? It's because there's no Apache helicopters flying over.
Right.
So
yeah, you know that. Yeah, there's something way more than what we're told out there. I mean, I've heard that there's like Egyptian tombs and stuff in those in the canyon. So
exactly, it is deep when you start. And but in the event that they prove it, in the event that there is evidence, could you imagine what that does to human history? You know what I mean?
Our history. I don't believe any of our history anymore. Yeah. There's actually a case that's been it's pretty popular right now. There's a case of a guy named Andrew Dawson out of Canada, and I spoke about this on my show today. Actually, he was posting videos on TikTok. Okay, and listen, I'm the first person that will say don't believe everything you see on TikTok. Okay, but this guy he was posting just some random stuff on TikTok, and he was filming a mountain in Canada. And there just happened to be this gigantic humanoid walking on the mountain. And he was dumbfounded by what he was seeing. And he was turned on the car, and he videoed it and put it on TikTok. Well, the next thing he knows, you know, he's like, he couldn't believe he saw that. So he tried to go back to go see if he could film it again. And there were people at the bottom of the mountain that said, no, these roads are closed. Turn around and go. You can't come up here. Well, he thought that was kind of weird, you know, like unmarked vehicles and stuff, you know, telling him to leave or whatever. And so, but of course he kept trying to go back to get another, some more footage of it. Well, the next thing he saw was like, he saw like a helicopter flying overhead. And then he saw, the next day there was like a military installation or something at the top of this mountain where that giant had been. And he just thought, man, this is so weird. Well, he was talking about it so much and posting so many videos about it on TikTok. He started noticing that he was being followed and had an unmarked vehicle sitting outside his house that would speed off when he opened the door. And he was very, very visibly shaken by all this and was documenting it all on social media. And fast forward it to, you know, a couple weeks to a month or so later, after all this started going down, he ended up dead.
Yeah.
And his obituary was in the paper, you know. And so now I have not done my hardcore research on all this. I just am going by what I saw in a couple of YouTube videos over the past week. But, it's, you know, this information was sent to me by a very reliable source. And, you know, you start digging into this stuff a little too much, and it can't be healthy for you and your family. So you have to be careful. And here's another thing. I actually remote viewed the Giant of Kandahar, and I did a show on that. And that's exactly what our military had gone to Afghanistan to do, was to go locate a giant to obtain a sample.
Well, that was one in the cave,
okay.
Right? The guy that was in the cave?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the entire troop, like some soldiers had gone, and they claimed they were up there for the, you know, Afghanistan, like something with war, you know, something for the war. I don't know. And they went missing. And so a special forces team was sent out to go locate the team that didn't make their checkpoint that day. And they found their body parts and their equipment and all that stuff. Apparently the giants had killed them and eaten them. But you know, this was just a hearsay kind of story. People had asked me to look into it, remote viewing. I did, but I saw a lot more than what the story, people's stories had been, you know, people had been saying about it. I picked up that actually they were on, the first team was there on a mission to obtain a sample of a giant. And they were very fully aware that there were giants there. They went on a mission to go find one. They actually had a helicopter on standby with a gigantic net to carry this giant off after they killed it. But when they got there, there was more than one giant there waiting for them and attacked them first. They weren't able to take the giants down. The giants ended up killing all of them and ate them, actually, some of those. It's very unfortunate. So the second team was sent in, and one of the giants ended up killing at least one of those soldiers. The second team, after I did that show and revealed my data, I had more than one person contact me, claiming that his family, one man, there's actually two, claiming that they had family members directly involved in that mission, and he could say that all my data was correct.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, it's, yes. I've I've had multiple people. I did have one person that was very close to the incident that said, yeah, my data was correct completely. So, apparently our government is, they're looking for samples of these giants. I don't know if they're doing like a cloning program or there's some kind of super soldier program going on. All of it, I don't know.
There's
something more to it. And once you start really looking into this stuff, your life starts getting weird. And you can ask that poor Andrew Dawson guy, you know, his family. He's not here today.
I had seen a YouTube video on that young man just a couple days ago. And the gentleman went through the whole story. And then he had gone through and had done some Google Earth searches and that kind of jazz and determined that the figure that he saw on top of the mountain was some type of telecommunications tower that they had put up there. And it was from the light, the angle, and the thing that he thought was like a tank turned out to be some type of remote telecommunications building or something to that effect. But he had it all on Google Earth, pulled up, and was speaking all matter of fact about it. So, you know, he went through the whole schmeal, and I was like, okay, all right, good picture, good picture.
I wonder which agency he worked for. I'm just kidding.
Right.
I'm just saying.
why all the surveillance? Why did that young man have somebody parked in front of his house surveilling his home? Why was there people in the road saying he can't go any further? Again, if you have nothing to hide, then why are you hiding things? And it's got to make you wonder. Now, with that Afghanistan thing, the Kandahar thing, I had actually read a story that they were able to – one of those giants had come out of the cave, and they had a total showdown with it. And pardon the dramatic, but they were exchanging fire. Apparently, this giant was throwing weapons of
spears.
Neanderthal type stuff.
But
they were able to bring it down, and they actually brought a helicopter out there. They picked it up. They carried it back to base.
They had a helicopter on standby, actually. So isn't that a little odd? They had a helicopter on standby with a net to carry a gigantic something, right?
Right.
Exactly.
And those gentlemen were told, okay, you didn't see any of this. And here's the thing that I think, and I'm guilty of it because, you know, I rib Dr. John all the time. But here's the thing that a lot of folks don't understand is that I'm the guy that won't say anything for fear of embarrassment, very self-conscious guy, and I don't want to be the guy that's going, God, did you hear what that will? Yeah, what's in his cigars, man? So I'm that guy that just won't say anything, okay? But when you're told, you know, and everybody has those what they call them, not DNAs, where you can't speak about it.
NDAs.
NDAs. There we go. Thank you.
The NDA. I've had to sign a couple of those, actually.
So you can't speak about it, but what's keeping somebody from getting loaded and talking about it? What's getting somebody from going into a total you know, other way, and and getting whole, kind of anti-government, if you will, and saying, screw it, I'm going to say what I got to say. I think a big of it is fear.
Well, actually, that's how some of the information was leaked. I'm not going to get into details, but it really scarred a lot of those guys. And they did shrink and talk about it. So, that's how some of the information got out.
That the government might do something to you or, worse yet, your family, there's no NDA that needs to be signed for something like that. And I think a lot of times that's how a lot of this stuff is kept under wraps, is because of the fact that the government, and as I say here on the show plenty of times, the American public needs to be protected from itself. I'm sorry. I know that's a mean thing to say, but we see how everybody acted during COVID. We need to be protected from ourselves. And for them to come out, and could you imagine? It's like the guy who just came out here recently and said that he figured out the Loch Ness Monster thing, how he figured out it was an eel, because apparently Loch Ness has a huge contingency of breeds of eels, and there's some eels in Loch Ness that can grow up to 15, 20 feet. I didn't go digging deep in it, but could you imagine if the government or any entity, be it, was to come out and actually prove, let's just throw Bigfoot under the bus. Let's say they were actually able to come out and hit my analogy. They found some Bigfoot poop. And they went out in the woods to go look for one. They found one. They put three in its chest. They dragged it out of the woods with its buddies. And the next thing you know, they're doing like the the bandits at the sheriff's department back in the 1890s, where they're up, propped up against the wall. What would happen to every acre of forestry in the United States if somebody was actually proved that Bigfoot? Here's one right here. Every knucklehead on the planet.
They say that's why. Was it Teddy? Was it Roosevelt? Maybe that. Who was it? It was one, whichever president was the one that made our national forest, who declared a lot of our forest areas.
Teddy Roosevelt.
He had Bigfoot experiences, and so he knows that there's Sasquatch out there. And some people say that he did that to maintain the natural habitats of the Sasquatch people out there. So our government's
makes
always
sense.
Known about these things.
That makes sense. So here we go. We're at quarter till, so we got to kick this thing around because we got about 10 minutes before I've got to cue in that old salty British lady. First off, real quick, like Miss Jones, I couldn't thank you enough for coming on tonight. It is great having you aboard. You're always welcome back. Talk about whatever you want. Yes, always
Thank you. I've had a blast. So, thank you. I'll come back anytime. Y'all let me know.
Whenever you have a spare moment and you need something to do on a Wednesday evening, just give us a call. We'd be more than happy, because it sure beats the daylights out of me ranting about the government corruption or something to that effect. So,
it would be
fantastic to have you aboard. So normally what we do this time of the show, we kick it around the room real quick. We have our parting shots. But for you, we want you, if you would, to do as much promotion for yourself as you possibly can, so that way the folks out there listening will make it easier on them to chase you down and become a fan of yours like we have become.
Well, thank you. Yeah, well, first of all, everybody can go to my website, thecryptidhuntress.com. All of my shows are on there, and you can find all the information about me, my bio, pictures, all sorts of fun stuff. But yeah, like I said, all my shows are there. Also, I have a YouTube channel. It's The Cryptid Huntress. Please go subscribe. Watch my videos, like it. You got to actually go hit the live button and the playlist button to get all my shows there. YouTube kind of hides all my good shows for some reason when you go to my page. But yeah, go there and check out my shows, and you guys subscribe. And also, I am a weekend host at Spaced Out Radio, and so I have a show called Off the Trails. It airs every Saturday and Sunday night. It's about cryptids and weird paranormal stuff. And so if you're into Bigfoot, Dogman, UFOs, time travel, whatever, 10 p.m. Eastern every Saturday, Sunday night at Spaced Out Radio on their YouTube channel. Of course, I have a daytime show on my YouTube channel, 1 p.m. every Wednesday, and then I have my remote viewing show that I do every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. That's tomorrow night. I'll be talking about the Fresno Nightcrawlers tomorrow night. So y'all please tune in. But yeah, other than that, you guys go hang out. If you want to be a member of my Patreon, it's The Cryptid Huntress. I'm on Twitter at Huntress Jessica, and on social media at The Cryptid Huntress. So that's a lot of plugging right there, but I think I got it. So thank you.
No, that's excellent. That's exactly what we need. So that way it makes it easier on the government folks listening to the show to track you down. So,
Oh, they've got a file on me. They're watching. I've got some handlers, I believe. I'm sure. Yeah, they're good. What's up, y'all?
But we really appreciate you coming aboard. And like I said, any night you want to come on back, because there is so much stuff out there. And I was just reading up on this Mel's Hole thing, speaking of the coast to coast. I don't know if you ever read up on that, where there was like a bottomless pit.
Okay. I remote viewed Mel's Hole. So that sounds horrible. I know.
Okay.
But I remote viewed Mel's Hole.
Okay.
And I did
a show on it, and we
laughed the whole time. I'm very familiar with it. Yeah, I actually went on ScaryCast and talked about it as well with Dr. John.
Oh, wow.
I've talked about it on ScaryCast.
We can burn up a whole hour talking about that just the same. So you're more than welcome to come on back any given time. We'd be happy to have you.
I'd love to. I love Mel's Hole. That's a weird one.
Yeah.
That's the top viewed remote viewing show on my channel, actually. More interest for that than any other thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's another one that leads one to kind of do the, you know what I mean? Just real strange. But speaking of strange, Dr. John, what kind of parting shots do you have this evening?
Well,
I've been behaving tonight.
I have a double feature parting shot. In fact, Jessica Jones is involved in both of these. We have on March the 4th, we have the Frogman Festival in Cincinnati, Ohio. She's going to be a speaker there. And then on April 1st, the 6th Annual Georgia Bigfoot Conference, Dillard House, Dillard, Georgia. It's going to be massive. It's going to be so much fun. Going to be going to Clayton this week, or Dillard, Clayton, and that whole area, putting up posters. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to have a great time down there at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. Going to have a few surprise guests and just lots of fun. So we've got a lot of great things going on. We've got Jacksonville Comic-Con coming up July the 15th in dear old Jacksonville, North Carolina, and just lots of great things going on. So thanks a lot, Dave, for asking, letting me do my recap. And Jessica, thanks again so much. It's always great to be on a show with you.
Thank you, John. I love this. I always have a great time with you guys. So thanks for having me.
All right,
Jessica,
I'll see you the last Wednesday of the month on The Cryptid Huntress, Glitch in the Matrix.
Yes, A Glitch in the Matrix on The Cryptid Huntress on YouTube. You guys all, please subscribe, everybody. It's a fun channel. Yes, I'll see you there.
Yeah, my son is addicted. He watches. I come walking through the living room, and he's like, hey, did you see this one? No, I've got things to do, Rob. I can't sit in. He's all into it. So, he's definitely
going. Shout out to Rob. Thanks,
yeah,
Rob.
Definitely got
I appreciate you, buddy.
Of course. If you'd seen him, you'd mistake him with a Sasquatch, but Dr. John will tell you he's met him. But Tim.
I love it.
Talk to me, young man. What kind of parting shots do you have?
Oh, boring as usual. No, actually, half of the week again. So, again, the kids are in a bus crash. That's not really a huge deal. They were fine. A little bit of drama because actually kind of a funny little story. My phone didn't work because one of the kids took a charger of ours, and so I gave my charger to my wife and let her charge the phone overnight. So my phone couldn't charge, so it died. I let her know while I was at work before that happened to say, hey, heads up, my phone's going to die, so you won't be able to get a hold of me, whatever. And, of course, the kids get into an accident. Kim tries to call me, can't, tries to call my work phone, which I have forwarded to my cell phone. So, anyway, that was kind of a nightmare to the day. But in lighter news, I got who I named Sebastian removed from my head. Yes, I had a pilar cyst. If you've ever watched Pimple Popper, you'd know what that is. I basically started making fun of myself and calling it my twin brother. It was a little bump on the top of my head. So, and oddly enough, the doctor kind of laughed too. I went there and I said, yeah, I'm finally getting Sebastian removed from my head. And I said, yes, I named it. And they all got a laugh out of that. So they showed it to me. It was a weird little sack filled with stuff. I hope it wasn't an alien, you know, or anything like that. But no, they sewed me up real good. I've now got the gauze,
you know, stuff all over my head with the Vaseline rub and all that good stuff. So that's the highlight of my week. And then coming up, just the same old stuff, man, finishing out the work week. My kid had a birthday, so we did a lot of celebrating last weekend.
Right.
This weekend, I don't think there's no football because it's a bye week, right? I think they've got Pro Bowl stuff going on. I don't remember how that works.
And
yeah, because they changed
football.
It now.
Go ahead and watch that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Football. And I don't think so.
Yeah,
but anyway,
right.
that's it in my world. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to the Pro Bowl stuff. Anyway,
no.
That's it for me.
Outstanding. Well, we also found out about Drama Llamas. That's a whole new one. That is fantastic. I am going to use the daylights out of that one. I even wrote it down.
Yeah.
That's how good a one that is. So that way I don't forget it. I'm
yeah.
like, man, what? How do I write?
I'm a no drama llama.
That is awesome. That is yeah, drama llama. It's too close
no drama
to home.
Llama.
I like it. Yeah, my wife's going to be hating
so the
me for that. I'll be hating.
The
right.
person I told that to tonight, I told it to a group of friends, and one of them sent me a picture of a llama while we were interviewing a while ago. So yeah, I have a it's actually a video of a llama with a hat on. Yeah, so I'm a no drama llama.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming on this evening. My quick parting shots, the usual, go on to Amazon.com. If you're the 1% of people out there that still read on this planet, I'm finding out more and more every day that nobody reads anymore. And that's a shame because reading is such a fantastic place to go. And I know everything now is watch, 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 and let somebody else tell you the story. Well, when you read, you kind of create the story for yourself. You take your own adaptation out of it instead of somebody else. And, but nevertheless, that's coming from an author's side. In the event that you do read still, first off, thank you. Second off, if you need something to read, go to Amazon. You know, the big website where they work everybody to death, don't pay them nothing. And look up Dave Atwell, The Hunger Series, and you'll find my three books there. Please. I ate ramen and chili beans for dinner tonight. Somebody, please feel free to go ahead and pick those books up. Some fine reading. I know the guy that wrote them. He's an all right cat. But, yeah, The Hunger Series on Amazon.com. And if you would, check it out. And, again, big thanks to our guest tonight, Miss Jessica Jones. Fantastic, awesome, great show tonight, man. This was for the – month I've had. Today is Groundhog's Day Eve, so I'm hoping tomorrow does not turn out to be the normal Groundhog's Day, because July or January was like Groundhog's Day for me alone. So I'm hoping today was a pretty fairly day, knock on the wood, don't want to sit right there and get too happy about it, but tomorrow is Groundhog's Day, so hopefully you won't end up like Bill Murray. And more importantly, I hope that gentleman in the big black coat and stovepipe hat doesn't get peed on by the groundhog like happened 5 or 6 years ago. So may Pugsatawny, Pecksatawny, Perksatawny, whatever his name is, Phil, we'll just call him Phil. Hopefully he will come on out, find his shadow, not find his shadow, or maybe come on out and just shoot the breeze with everybody, have a beer. Regardless, we hope everybody has a fantastic Groundhog's Day. Remember to put up your Groundhog's Day tree. Don't forget to spend the night wrapping up your Groundhog's Day gifts for the kids in the morning in the event you celebrate Groundhog's Day. So, and everybody's going, what is he talking about? Do I need to go out?
Hey,
do I need to go out and buy ground?
Hey, Dave, this is Dr. John, and I want to be sure to invite everybody at 10 o'clock here in about 5 minutes to go check out the one and only Clyde Lewis Ground Zero podcast, with our exclusive coverage of that on the Internet being the first Internet affiliate. So just go to skinnycastpodcast.com, and you can listen to the one, the only Clyde Lewis on Ground Zero. There you go. Back to you, Dave.
Right on. So with that, I am getting in front of the laptop. Oh, and Spectrum Internet has blessed me with some internet service tonight, so we're in good shape. So, again, big thanks to everybody, especially to Ms. Jessica Jones, who rocked the house tonight, did a fantastic job and held us all up, did a great job. We loved having you. Look forward to the next trip. And we will talk to everybody. Absolutely. Like I said, welcome back anytime. All you got to do is raise your hand. So, with all that said, we hope everybody has a wonderful week. You guys try to take care of one another. And again, one random act of kindness a day by everybody can change it all. So try to take care of one another. All right? So again, thank you for listening. Pop Culture Stars.
Thanks.
And good night, everybody.
Thank you, Dave. You were great.
No,
you were great, Dave.
I can go for 90 minutes, and then I go back to being a dirtbag. So, all right. So, British lady, where are we at, babe? Come on, British lady. Talk to me.